Hour number three, Chase and Big Joe, 102.5 The Game at Tennessee Brew Works. Today we've had a lot of fun so far on the program, and we keep it going now with our buddy Greg Wyshynski from ESPN, who joins us now to talk a little hockey with us. Greg, what's up? How you doing?
I'm doing great. I have several pucks in my pants that I'm hiding from Alex Ovechkin. So I'm doing great.
I was wondering if that was going to come up right at the start. You did not disappoint me, so thank you for that. Yes, Ovi scores 900 last night, and if you missed it, Jordan Binnington took the puck and hit it in his pants. Eventually, he got busted on that, but that was pretty funny.
So Binnington just spoke in Buffalo before the Blues game against the Sabres, and he said that he fully intended to give the puck back to Ovechkin. He felt like since he turned the puck over for the goal that he had an unofficial assist and maybe felt some ownership of the puck. The thing that I've been mulling over, boys, look, when you're playing Ovechkin, you figure he might score a goal. So there's a good chance Binnington's going to give up the 900th goal. How do we know for sure he doesn't already have a puck in his pants and then gave a duplicate puck to the linesman and kept the 900th goal puck to then sell on the black puck selling market?
I mean, Jordan Bennington's kind of crafty. I mean, I could see him doing that.
Exactly. We don't know. He might be the Daniel Ocean of goaltenders and pulling a heist that we don't even know about. But look, it was a really fun moment last night, and it, you know, it's going to always be a part of the story. But dude, 900 goals for Alex Ovechkin is insane. Like, even, you know, the idea that he broke the Gretzky record was one level of crazy. The idea that we now have a player in the modern era, not back in the 1980s, where the goalies don't know what they're doing and they're wearing, you know, Q-tips on their legs as far as pads go. Like, to have a player hit 900 goals in this era is just astounding to me.
It's pretty impressive. It's his third goal of the year in 13 games. He hits 900. I know everybody's going to ask, I mean, does he stick around for a few more years and try to go for 1,000? I feel like that's a little bit going to be tough for him to do, but he's already set the market now for 900, and can anybody catch him?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, can anybody catch him? We used to say that about Gretzky, so who even knows? I mean, if somebody's going to come down the pike and do what Ovi's done. As far as his future goes, I spoke to Alex before the season at Capitals camp. Everybody around the team kind of says the same thing. It really depends on how his body is feeling. This guy's got a love for the game. He's not necessarily looking to leave after this contract and go play out the string in the KHL in Russia. Like, if his body holds up and he's still scoring at a decent clip, and by the way, let's not forget, if the Capitals are a playoff contender, which they've been now for the last few seasons under Spencer Carberry, I don't think that this is necessarily his last season, but I do kind of believe that it might be based on the contract he signed and based on, like, what else can you accomplish at this point if you're Alex Ovechkin?
Yeah, and, like, how much – I mean, it's still impressive that he had 44 goals last year in 65 games, but realistically, you know, he's – I mean, when was the last time he played 82? 2017-18? So, I mean, like, I think asking him to score at that clip anymore might be asking a little too much.
It might be. I mean, the one thing I'll say about him, though, is the way he scores goals does play in his favor. He's never been a real, I got to be the quickest guy on the ice to score type player. I mean, he's a guy who stands in one spot and fires pucks in the power play. So from that aspect, he might have a little bit of a later expiration date than most goal scorers do. So, I mean, we'll see. Ultimately, it's going to have to do with how his body is feeling and you know, where his head's at insofar as where the future is. But again, the fact that the Capitals are relevant, that they're playing good hockey, that they might have a team around him that could challenge in the East, certainly plays in their favor to try to keep this guy around. But I do think that, like, if he decides it's it, I think he'll do the Gretzky thing and like announce it in the last weeks of the season, so there can be at least a little bit of a celebration. I've kind of believed he didn't want to say anything before the season because he already took a year away from the team, attention-wise, with the Gretzky chase. I don't think he wanted to do that for his second straight season.
And then tonight it's Capitals Penguins, so we get Ovechkin and Crosby, obviously Malkin in there as well, which I think is, you know, based on everything you just said, these kind of matchups are going to be celebrated more and more because we don't know how much longer we're going to see them.
Yeah, they're few and far between. We did a full special episode of our show, The Drop, on you can find it on the NHL and ESPN YouTube, about the Crosby-Ovechkin rivalry. And, you know, one of the things that's kind of underrated, and I do, by the way, think that the Crosby-Ovechkin rivalry is the greatest player versus player rivalry we've ever had in the NHL. Yeah. One of the things that's underrated is that, like, these guys were placed into what was already a very heated existing rivalry. Like, the Penguins and Capitals hated each other well before Ovechkin and Crosby showed up. And so, you know, that's sort of the secret sauce to why this rivalry really resonated and why it became so marketable, is that, you know, beyond having two generational talents in the same conference or in the same division, you had two generational talents leading teams that already had, you know, a couple decades of real animosity against each other.
You know, Greg, thank you for that, because I think all too often across pro sports we forget, you know, teams are all buddies with each other. I think in hockey there are more "I truly hate you because you're on that team" mindset than any other professional sport, and I love it.
Yeah, you know, rivalries have certainly changed a little bit in our sport. I don't think that anything that we have today comes close to, like, Detroit and Colorado, where you look at the ice at the end of the game and it looked like, you know, a dentist office with all the blood on the floor. You know, like, but you know, we do have heat. I think the Battle of Florida might be our best rivalry right now in the NHL as far as the real actual hatred between the players on those teams. Like, they really don't like each other, the Lightning and the Panthers. The Penguins and Capitals probably have some of that too. But, you know, those kinds of rivalries are few and far between. That's why, ultimately, the best rivalry in hockey right now is probably USA-Canada, because the ones in the NHL do have, like you said, that sort of, you know, a little bit of a friendship. These guys all train with each other in the offseason, right? Like, it's a different vibe, but we still have some real animosity, in particular in the Battle of Florida these days.
Oh, I love that. All right, Greg, let's get your opinion on the great goal that did or did not happen the other night versus Minnesota. Everybody's weighed in on this. Andrew Burnett was on our morning show today. He thought it shouldn't have been a goal. Chase read the rule, and it should be a goal. Where do you stand on what happened the other night?
Well, the rule is interesting because I read the rule, and I don't think it should be a goal.
Okay.
I'm team Predators on this one. I think they got jobs. And the reason why, like, I appreciate what Steven Stamkos said about would the puck have gone to the end boards if the net wasn't off its moorings, and then basically the play is over at that point or whatever. But, like, I think the problem I have with the rule is the imminent scoring chance part of it. How many whacks of a pinata do you get before it's not an imminent scoring chance? Because to me, the scoring chance is when the puck comes off of Johansson's stick the first time, goes off the side of the net, then he collects it and scores on a rebound. So, like, how many shots, like, if it's his fourth shot on goal in that sequence, that's still imminent? Like, to me, the scoring chance is the initial deflection or the initial shot, and then after that, if it doesn't go in, then you whistle the play down because the puck is literally sideways. The goal cage is literally sideways. So I'm with the Predators on this one. I don't think that they got the call right. And, in fact, I was talking to someone with a Western Conference team yesterday, and he was telling me, like, everybody in their practice facility was saying the same thing, which is that the Predators got jobbed on this one, and the Wild goal shouldn't have counted.
Here's the other thing too, Greg. If this is game four or five of the Western Conference final, does that get ruled differently?
It probably doesn't, because this is how they interpret the rule. I mean, at least the best thing you can say about this for the NHL is that at least they're consistent. Like, when we've had situations like this in the past, usually it doesn't look as goofy as it did the other night, where the puck is going over the goal line and there's no net there at all. But they've been pretty consistent in counting goals like this. So, I mean, I still think they probably call it the same way. I just don't think that in the spirit of the rule, to me, has always been continuation of the play. Like, the net comes off, the guy's got the puck on his stick, he's skating in on goal, he's firing the puck, it goes through the crease, it's a goal. In this case, like, this guy got a whack at it, and then he collects the rebound and then scores, and to me that's not, like, a continuous play. I don't think it's within the spirit of the rule.
Did you know this rule? I mean, I know there's a lot of rules in hockey. Had you ever seen this before? It happened the other night?
Yes, I have. You know, typically when a goalie is, especially when a goalie is pushing off on the post to try to, like, get some leverage, sometimes the net will come off its moorings. And in those situations, if the puck goes in the net afterwards, even though the net is off, they're going to count it because of the defensive player dislodging the net and sort of the continuation of the offensive play. Again, the difference for me here was how much are we going to allow for it under the label imminent scoring chance. And a second chance opportunity to me isn't imminent. It's delayed. It's part two. Like, it's
right.
It's not part of the initial play where you'd say, oh, well, this guy got robbed of an opportunity to score because the net's off its moorings. I just think what Johansson did isn't in keeping in the spirit of the rule.
Interesting. Let me ask you this. Football coaches all hate homecoming because all the distractions off the field. Do NHL coaches like international travel? And I say this because the National Predators leave next week to go overseas. I got to be thinking, head coaches, there's a lot of distractions, right, Greg, when you go for an international game?
There are. I would say the NHL comparison to homecoming games would be like a banner raising or a number retirement ceremony. Like, there's just so much delay and pomp and circumstance that goes on around those games. That's when you get kind of out of your routine. In the case of international travel, though, I've talked to a bunch of players over the years that have done these NHL Europe games, and they all say the same thing, which is that it's a nice bonding experience. Like, it's a chance to kind of, like, get away from the norm and you know, you go sightseeing, you go to these special events that they have for you, you're playing in front of a different, you know, a group of fans that are reacting differently to what's happening on the ice, and it becomes a bonding experience. I seem to remember a trip that the Boston Bruins took to China one year where that was like a real moment where they coalesced as a team just because of the novelty of being over there together. So this can, I don't know how the coaches feel about it because it is an interruption in routine.
Right.
I know the players really appreciate not only the chance to bond on the road, but also to, you know, have a wonderful memory as a professional athlete playing games overseas.
We're talking to Greg Wyshynski, ESPN NHL senior writer. Steven Stamkos, what do you think is going to happen there? Obviously, he's the one that forced overtime the other night, finally breaks that drought he was in. But there's a lot of discussion around here about him and, you know, should he stay? Should Barry Trotz try to shop him? What do you think?
I think it's a combination of two factors. The first being that he's got trade protection and he's got a family. And if his family is comfortable here in Nashville and they don't want to move, then I think that's going to weigh very heavily on whatever he decides to do professionally. I think his family has always been first and foremost in his mind as far as what Stamkos does contractually, where he wants to play and all that stuff. The other part of this is obviously the Predators' ability to move him. And then you get into how do you maximize the value for Steven Stamkos at this point in his career when his numbers are down, his production is down, and that's how much money you're willing to keep on his contract beyond, and obviously you've got it well beyond the season. And so that becomes the real conundrum is, you know, how much of this contract are the Predators willing to keep? And then based on that, that's going to dictate the return. But it ultimately comes down to when and if he wants to move. It's obviously not working here for him in the same way that it did in Tampa. But what does his family want? What does he want? That's the ultimate question that has to be answered.
You know, obviously it's being looked at now as it was the wrong move to sign him. But at the point in which they did sign him, I think everybody and their brother thought, hey, this could be a really good move. What did you think at that time?
Well, for me, it was more like talking about the overall plan that the Predators were enacting in signing multiple veteran players, right? Like, it was sort of that they were trying to build on some playoff momentum and maybe be a little bit more competitive as they waited for some of their younger players to mature. But as far as his production goes, like, no one thought he was going to bottom out the way he did. I mean, I remember going down to Tampa and covering his return game to face the Lightning and the slump he was in. It was just, like, unfathomable that his production rate was going to drop the way that it has, or that, you know, the guy wouldn't shoot the puck as much as he used to in previous seasons. So, you know, the direction of the team part of it, I thought what Barry did was okay as far as bringing in some veterans to try to keep the team competitive as they waited for the next wave to mature. But, you know, like if someone's doing 20-20 hindsight on Stamkos' numbers, no one thought he was going to be this bad.
Greg, listen, you are invited Monday night. Chase and I are taking over a comedy club in Key West. True story. Comedy Key West. We're doing an entire stand-up routine Monday night. You are invited. You are the only VIP pass we're extending. So if you get some free time Monday night, come to Key West and witness history, okay?
Now, listen, I have a newborn, so I can't. Also, I didn't hear anything about waiving the two-drink minimum for me. So I think that's a little offensive. But I wish you guys luck. I wish I had I've done live podcasts before, so I guess that's. I mean, you guys know it's a different animal than getting up and doing stand-up. I've never had the cojones to do like a solid 5 minutes on an open mic. So I wish you guys luck. I think you'll do great.
Thank you very much, Greg. We appreciate it. Going to be something, that is for sure. But thanks so much for doing this. We'll talk to you next week.
Anytime.
All right. Greg Wyshynski, senior writer for the NHL at ESPN, joining us here on the program. And so he's team predators when it comes to the goal.
Yeah.
That's good.
And I don't like the fact that he shot you were team like by the rule.
Yeah, well, you know, I wasn't.
Well, I thought it was good. I listened to Andrew Burnett this morning on Robbie and Rex Road, and I was like, well, of course he's going to be team predator. But he explained it. I'm like, you know what? Yeah, that's why I'm not a coach. I would lose my mind.
And yeah.
Brunette kept his coolness through that, which I thought was really cool.
Yeah. We'll discuss this and much more coming up next. Chase and Big Joe live at Tennessee Brew Works today, 102.5 The Game.